Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. I'm with Ross Tucker. And it's time for Ask Ross. This is where we take your questions for Ross, and then the best question wins the KSN polo shirt. If you want to submit a question for Ross, it's really easy. Just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Ross button there, or you could email us at info@ksnsports.net. Ross, are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do this. Let's start with John from Jacksonville, North Carolina. He says, greetings from the east coast of North Carolina and the home of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. My question is draft-related, timely this week. He says, I heard a quote this morning by Nick Saban on the two words that affect your draft most, if talent is equal, that is and but. Saban explained that in draft meetings you either hear and he's a good teammate and he's coachable, or you get but he has a DUI, or but he isn't a great teammate in the workout room. What value do winning NFL teams put on this sense of all NFL players? They all have God-given talent, but is talent the be-all, or how important are these other things?
So they are important. It's a good question. It definitely varies from organization to organization. There are some organizations where the guy graduating, the guy getting a great report from the strength coach, the guy, you know, all these things really, really matter to them. And frankly, Jim, I think there are others that just pay it lip service. You know, and in fairness, it's not their job to have a team full of good citizens. It's their job to win football games. So, I don't know. I look at the two teams in the Super Bowl, right? You know, for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Leonard Fournette has had his issues. Antonio Brown has had so many issues, I can't even keep track. You know, on the flip side with the Chiefs, Chris Jones has had issues. Tyrann Mathieu back in the day had issues. And I think that is an important distinction to bring up as well, because there's sort of three different things there, right? Like, there's the guy that always does the right thing and he's always going to do the right thing and he keeps his nose clean and whatever. Then there's the guy that had some issues in college and showed some maturity problems, some maturity issues. But then he got to the NFL and he matured. He grew up, like a lot of us do, and has been a model citizen. That's Tyrann Mathieu, right? That's him. There are other guys like Antonio Brown that had issues and then continue to have issues, or Reuben Foster or Aldon Smith or any number of guys, right? So, you know, Aldon Smith has a – think about guys like Aldon Smith and Josh Gordon. I mean, they've got lengthy – rap sheets of off-field issues, but they're really talented, so they're going to get a number of opportunities. Whereas I was not that talented, so I would not have gotten that many opportunities. I probably wouldn't have gotten any other opportunities if I got in trouble doing something.
Well, just an add-on question to that, Ross. You sometimes hear this, okay, how important, though, is the culture of the team itself? By that, what I mean is, instead of a team just having a theory, hey, if these guys had issues off the field, we don't care, we take them, versus you always hear things like, New England has a great culture, so they could bring in a guy who may have had off-field issues, but you know what? You come to New England, the influence of the clubhouse will straighten you out. Either that or we just get rid of you. How important is that?
Well, what's funny about that to me is I do think there's some truth to that, Jim. But anytime a team takes a guy that has a checkered past, the first thing they say is, well, you know, we think we've done a lot of research on him and he's made amends and we think, you know, he deserves a second chance. And we want to give him that second. You know, they make it seem like they're doing a charitable thing, right? like they're doing him a favor, right? Like the reality is the only reason why they're signing him or drafting him or whatever it is because they think he can help them win football games. But they spin it like they are rehabilitating him for society, you know, which always cracks me up. And then right after that, Jim, they'll say, plus, you know, with our locker room culture, you know, I mean, we get him in our locker room with our guys. Nobody ever says, yeah, I don't know. We got a bunch of bad guys in our locker room. Throwing this guy in the mix, it's going to get even worse. Like, they always act like they have, you know, they have found the special locker room formula that no one else has ever discovered. Kind of annoys me.
Okay. Let's go with Pat from Cheshire, Connecticut. He says, hello, Ross. Just curious on how you watch a football game. What position matchups do you watch? Does it change throughout the game? Does it change if you're watching it for fun versus for work versus as a player? Thanks to all of you for keeping me up to date on Penn State football.
Yeah, it can change a lot. You know, I try – it depends on when I'm watching it and how I'm watching it. This is actually a very interesting question. I mean, if I am prepping for a game, Jim, I am usually watching the end zone copy only of the coaching tape because that's where I learn the most about how they line up offensively and defensively, and I can see the jersey numbers best to really study the guys. So I'll usually watch just the end zone copy of their previous game or two of the coaching tape if I'm studying for a game. If I'm just watching it to watch it, I'm usually I try not to like think about what I would say if I was the broadcaster. You know, I try to just enjoy it and watch it. And every once in a while, the broadcaster might say something. I might think, "Ooh." Or I might notice that I think the broadcaster missed something important, right? Like, didn't point out the most significant why on the play. If you're a color commentator, your job is the why. Why did that play work? Why did that play not work? What was the single biggest reason why it was successful or not? And I think there are times where I watch a game and I'm thinking, man, that's not what I – he didn't point out that the left tackle got blown up. That's why the whole play went bad. The thing is most people don't notice that. You know, most people just are just watching and just listen. I tend to probably watch the line of scrimmage for the first half a second, maybe second, just to see if there's any leakage or anybody gets anything significant there. And then I'm just watching the ball like everybody else.
Okay, let's move on.
Hold a second. When I'm actually calling the game, then it's a lot different. When I'm actually calling the game, I'm trying to look at their coverage and the defensive front. And if I think pressure's coming, so I can call that out ahead of time, I'm looking at the offense's formation to try to see if I have an idea of what they might run. Totally different when I'm calling a game.
While we're on that topic, I always wondered, when I'm watching a Penn State game, sometimes I hear them comment on players, and I swear to God, it's James Franklin talking. And I'm assuming the pregame meeting with the coach has a lot of effect on what the announcers say. Is that part of the situation, Ross?
There's no question. There is no doubt that those production meetings, I mean, you're talking for at least 20 minutes to 30 minutes with the head coach, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and sometimes players. You know, I just did the Patriot League championship game recently. We talked to the coordinators, talked to the head coach. And, you know, they're the ones that are around these guys every day. And a lot of times what they say does match up with what I've seen on tape. But every once in a while, you know, they'll say something and I'll think, that's not what I think. That's not what I saw. The coaches are very well aware that what they say in those meetings can get, you know, very well aware. I'll give you an example, Jim, a really good example. You know, I did the Notre Dame Blue Gold game one year, okay? And I knew some of their assistant coaches. And talking with them, it was very clear that DeShone Kizer was going to be the quarterback, okay? Very clear that Kizer, like, they were just like, oh, Kizer and this, like, you know, like the O-line coach at the time or whatever. Very clear, right? Then you've got Brian Kelly, who in the meeting says, it's neck and neck. I mean, it's too close to call. And then after the Blue Gold game, where obviously everyone's watching and they want to see who the quarterback will be, we're going to interview a player. Nope. Instead, we were told we're interviewing Brian Kelly. And Brian Kelly gets the mic, Jim, and he says, man, this competition. And by the way, Kizer played great in the Blue Gold game, and Zaire didn't. Malik Zaire did not.
Yeah.
But Kelly gets on the microphone. He's like, whew, it is too close. I mean, this is going to go all the way up to the first game. Like, these guys are – meanwhile, I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know how you can say that. And even while I was watching the game, I'm like, it was clear as day Kizer was better, but – Brian Kelly didn't want Zaire to transfer. Brian exactly. Kelly wanted Zaire to be there. You know, he can't come out and say, oh, yeah, it's going to be Kizer, because then Zaire would have been gone. He had to make it seem like it was still a really close competition. So they know that what they say matters and it has an impact.
Okay. Let's sneak one more question in, Ross. Brad from Perkasy says, in practice, the players wear the extra padding on the helmet. With player safety being so important, why doesn't the NCAA require it during games?
You know, I don't know a ton about that extra padding. I see him wearing it. I guess I don't know how much of an impact that has. But I think if it was statistically significant, I think they probably would have him wear it during games. But I don't think it is.
Okay. That is going to be it for Ask Ross. Stick around in quarter number four. Andy comes back. We will announce our winner, so stay tuned.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.